What's up, Emily? How you doing?
Good. I'm pretty good. How are you doing? I feel good. I say good every time. So
right.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. When people ask me how I am these days, I either say good and immediately move on to the next thing, or I answer with an answer about work. Mm-hmm. It's not a weird thing. I'm like, oh, work's good. And they're like, I asked you how you were. And I'm like, oh, like, where does work end and I begin? I don't know.
And sometimes they're very much integrated. Believe me, I know, because I used to work two jobs at the same time. You work so many jobs at the same time. So I don't know how, like, you know, you wear many hats.
One might call it's related to a theme for this episode about intersectionality.
Absolutely.
I am doing lots of things at once, and I am a woman, and I am all these other things. And so are you.
Yeah. Well, so I'm a man, and I'm a gay man. And the reason I bring that up is because we're talking to Gay Lesta today, and they work with therapy for LGBTQ individuals. I think mental health is a very important thing. And, you know, we tend to start these episodes off, you know, asking how the other person is. But it's good to check in with people, you know.
Check in.
Yeah, I think it's a very important thing, because mental health is such an important issue, especially in the LGBTQ community. You know, you hear stories about young people ending their lives because of the bullying that they receive.
Yeah, and feeling alone and feeling like they're the only ones going through different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone's story is important, but also there's some trends. And so you're not alone, and you're not the only one that has experienced this feeling before. And so reaching out to community and working with a therapist is essential.
Absolutely. And, you know, we do talk about the negative stigma that America has on mental health. Mm-hmm. So we bring that up as well. So please stay tuned, because I'm very excited and I'm very happy that we had this interview with Gay Lesta about mental health in the LGBTQ community. So stick around. Okay, everyone, for this episode, we have a wonderful guest on with us, Chelsea DiMardi. She is the co-president of Gay Lesta. Chelsea, welcome to We Rebel podcast.
Hi, I'm glad to be here today.
And we're glad to have you.
Hey, so we know what Gay Lesta is because we Googled it, but could you give a quick overview of what Gay Lesta is, what your mission is, to give our listeners, the landscape of what we're about to jump into?
Yeah, sure. So Gay Lesta is the Psychotherapist Association for Gender and Sexual Diversity, and we are based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. And to our knowledge, we are one of the largest and oldest organizations of our kind of mental health professionals who are LGBTQ identified that serve the public. And, our mission is to serve the LGBT community by providing psychotherapeutic services, to build awareness of cross-cultural issues, and to promote awareness of concerns impacting the mental health of the LGBT community. And we have around up to almost 400 members at this point who are all in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we just had our 30-year anniversary, actually. So Gay Lesta was actually founded in 1987 and has grown over the last 30 years.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so that's actually one of the reasons that drew us to your organization, is that you've been working in this space for 30 years, founded in 1987. And so, in the recent couple of decades, you know, there's been a lot more support for the LGBTQ community, which is amazing. But there's something to be said for duration, and there's something to be said for history as well. And so I'd like to hear from you a little bit about the history of your organization, when it was started, and how it's changed from the beginning to now.
Yeah, so I'll just let you know, I've been part of the organization for maybe about 3 years now, so I'm relatively new, but what I've heard from my other board directors is that, you know, it started in 1987 by just a few mental health professionals coming together in the San Francisco Bay Area and wanting to join together to sort of form an organization that advocated for affirmative practices for the LGBT community. And so just a few people coming together, creating a referral network for the local community so that they can access therapeutic services. That's sort of how it started. And then from there, people just continued to join the community that lived in the Bay Area. So it has, like I said, we've been around for quite a long time, and we have a referral directory of therapists which people can access through our website. And primarily, people do access it. They're looking for an LGBT therapist. We're like the place to go. So that's been the purpose of the website for the most part. And then the other part of Gay Lesta, as we've evolved, is really evolved into social justice advocacy work. And so in the more recent years, two of the things that come to mind are the fight for marriage equality. Gay Lesta was involved in that in 2008 when Proposition 8 was passed in California, which banned same-sex marriages. Gay Lesta was involved in advocating for against SAS. And also, more recently, in the more recent years, from about 2010 till today, 2018, Gay Lesta has been very active in advocating against what's called conversion therapy, or another name for that is sexual orientation change efforts or gender orientation change efforts. So conversion therapy is actually a pseudoscience. It is not effective. It does not work. You cannot change one's gender identity or sexual orientation. It is harmful for consumers, and it is unethical, an unethical practice. So Gay Lesta has been at the forefront of advocating against that to help protect consumers and to provide adequate mental health for our community.
And mental health for the LGBTQ community is a very important issue. You know, I want to know if you can kind of ballpark it for me. Because I think the process of the way our society is now of coming out and feeling comfortable in your own community, it can be a very stressful thing depending on where you are in this country. And I want to know if you can see anything, whether it be like at a teenage level or maybe even young adult, can you see where therapy becomes a very vital part for a member of the LGBTQ community?
Oh, absolutely. So you mentioned a young person, like maybe a teenager. Is that what you said?
Absolutely.
Or young adult?
Yep. Either.
Absolutely. So I would say in general, being a teenager or a young adult is something that's very difficult for everyone. It's very stressful. There's a lot of changes and transitions that you go through. There's identities that we try on when we're going through that developmental period. On top of that, if someone is identifying as LGBT or questioning their sexual identity or gender orientation, on top of the regular, ordinary stress of daily life, they will be also faced with the stigma of those identities and what's called the minority stress of being part of our community. So because of that, it is essential to really get support around exploring who you are and affirming who you are. And psychotherapy is a great way, a safe space, to engage in conversation with a professional who can really help support your process of becoming and figuring out what's going on with you and who you are, and really affirming that in a positive way and reframing it as a normal part of human development. So being LGBT is not something that's abnormal or deviant. It's actually a normal part of human diversity, and it's a beautiful part of that as well. So that in that way, it can be very, very useful to engage in therapy during that time.
And the second part to that question, because mental health anyway, just regardless of what group, mental
health, I feel like everyone needs a therapist. And I got that from my mom. She was like, everybody needs 1 hour a week to talk about themselves to an unbiased source, no matter who they are. And I was like, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I believe that too. But I think we have such a stigma about mental health in this country.
Sure, and asking for help.
And so add on top of that, yes, you're part of a minority group. And so you have pressures of both on you. And I imagine that's got to weigh on someone. So are people reluctant to seek services like yours?
Yeah, I mean, at first, I think for a lot of people, just mental health in general, like you said, carries a stigma. Like, if I seek out help, that's a reflection of me being weak or sick in some way. But actually, the opposite is true. Seeking out support from others really is a reflection of somebody's strength. And so that is something to keep in mind if anybody listening has been thinking about going to see a therapist but has some reservations. It actually is a positive resource for you. In other areas of our life, other areas of our health, or physical health, for instance, People don't hesitate to try to do things to live a healthy lifestyle and to be proactively healthy. Well, engaging in a relationship with a therapist is a resourceful and healthy way as well. And it can also be a proactive way to maintain your mental health and help you reach the goals that you want to reach in your life. So I think it's important to reflect on that as you're seeking out therapy.
Yeah, because, you know, I think about it all the time. I'm happy to admit that, you know, I was seeking therapy when I was in high school. And those, like we said earlier, those are very transformative years. And it's hard to admit to yourself, like, hey, I need to go talk to someone about my problems, because, you know, yeah, whether it's the stigma about mental health saying like, oh, yeah, you may seem weak, as we were talking about. You know, there's got to be something inside yourself to say like, no, I need someone to help me. I just need another party. And if it's not a friend, if it's not a family member, it's an impartial party that can help you, you know, talk through some of your problems. And so I would like to echo that statement. And please, anyone, if you do want to seek some help, please go. There are so many people out there that are willing to talk to you. Emily.
So I want to circle back to something you said that when I learned that this was a thing, I was shocked, which is conversion therapy. And so, I mean, I live in we live in Los Angeles, relatively liberal. I don't have any friends that have experienced going to conversion therapy. I've mainly only seen it as like comedic sketches, making fun of it as a thing. But I'm curious to hear from you, you know, where are we at with that issue? Because it's one of your major advocacy issues of, you know, gay lesta. And so where are we at? Like, how are there, in my head, I'm like, oh, they don't exist anymore, but clearly they do. So, you know, where are these therapy programs, and how are we deconstructing that idea?
Yeah. So unfortunately, there are people all over the country that are practicing conversion therapy right now. And even in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I'll give you a little bit of the history on sort of the laws that have been passed in the recent years involving conversion therapy. So back in 2010, in California, members of GayLesta actually noticed that there were continuing education providers for therapists that were providing continuing education around how to do conversion therapy in California. And GayLesta members were outraged by this because this practice, like I said, is unethical and harmful. So GayLesta contacted the California Board of Behavioral Sciences, which regulates continuing education, and complained about this. Basically, they were told that there was nothing that the board could do. So GayLesta decided in turn to turn to California congressmen and to advocate for with legislatures about this problem. And basically what happened from 2010 to 2014 was that a bill was created. It's called SB 1172, which basically declared that conversion therapy should be illegal to practice with minors. And that bill turned into law in 2014. So California was the very first state in the United States to pass any laws that stated that conversion therapy was harmful and illegal. And right now, this law only protects minors in California. But since then, since 2014, up until now, 2018, there's been a total of 14 different states that have passed similar laws following the lead of California. So, this is a positive trend that's happening. It's really great that this originated with members of GayLesta organizing and advocating with congressmen, right? Mm-hmm. But there is still so much work to be done. Minors aren't the only ones who are at risk of being damaged by conversion therapy. Adults are damaged by conversion therapy as well. It's been proven to lead to high rates of depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and suicide. So it's really a traumatic practice. This is a major mental health issue, not just mental health issue, but also a public health issue. And so as a result of that, the most recent advocacy work of GayLesta is two of our members, Jim Walker and Guy Albert, are organizing a national joint statement against the practice of conversion therapy. It's called the United States Joint Statement. And what they are currently doing is getting major medical organizations across the country to sign this joint statement to acknowledge that conversion therapy is harmful and to advise on affirmative practices for LGBT clientele. And this is very important, this joint statement. They're in the works right now. They've got maybe about 14 different organizations that have signed on. But basically the benefits of doing something like this is it will make it easier for laws to be passed in states that do not have laws against conversion therapy. It will be backing for that.
That's great. I love hearing about these team efforts. This is, we've spoken to a lot of groups over the last year and a half now. And one of the best things is, you know, they say two things, like start local, but also like reach out to your friends. And what this feels like, this is an issue that so many people are turning around and they're seeing the negative effects of these conversion therapy place camps. And it's so nice to know that there's a success in this. On a larger scale, though, do you see, I struggled to ask this, but do you think this administration is going to do anything to help this cause and eradicate these conversion therapies?
No, I do not think that they are going to help.
Yeah.
I think that what really needs to happen right now is organizations like ours need to organize and actually move into action steps towards making changes in the world. And I think also individuals can take personal responsibility for the way they show up in their local sphere of influence with their family, their friends, where they work at their jobs, and really advocating for minority groups. And especially if somebody is an ally, you know, really taking a stand if somebody is speaking in a stigmatizing way about, say, an LGBT person or a person of color or a person of large body size, you know, you're really taking a stand and speaking up for that being wrong and unacceptable bias. So that's actually what I think is going to make more of a difference right now in the world instead of our current administration.
Yeah, because, you know, it's so hard to watch, you know, you see Barack Obama, when he's in office, speak out against conversion therapy. And yet, you know, you fast forward to this administration, you've got someone like Mike Pence, who has, you know, back in his state, he'd enacted so many things that were against the LGBTQ community. And so it's really hard to, you know, watch this regression, even though we're moving later on in years, you'd think everyone's just on the same page. But of course, here we are talking about it. So obviously there's that problem. I want to ask a little question about, this is more specific to Gay Lesta, but the act of, you know, finding a therapist, because I do notice that there's, you can either, you know, find one by, you can enter your information in, and so by address you can find one, but there's also the option of group therapy. So I just kind of want to ask about what kind of the services that you guys offer in terms of that therapy sessions. Yeah.
Group therapy. Yeah, so, you know, all of our members on Gay Lesta really offer unique services. And I haven't gone onto the site to review which groups are on our site right now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's all kinds of groups that are on Gay Lesta. You know, there may be a substance abuse and harm reduction group. There may be a group around for eating disorders, you know, and how to address eating disorders. There may be a say relationship group for gay men who are wanting to be in romantic relationships. And so the list goes on. It really depends sort of on the provider and what they have to offer. If someone wanted to find out what kind of groups we have, definitely you can go to the website, but also you could just email, one of the therapists on the website and ask for a particular group. We do have a listserv, an email listserv, where we communicate with each other back channel, and we try to provide referrals for people and find them placements, even if there's not something that's listed on our website.
Amazing. And so I wanted to dig in a little bit. So you're the co-president of this organization, but you're also a licensed marriage and family therapist yourself. And so a buzzword right now that is also, I think, authentically true is intersectionality, right? So, like, I am a white woman, but I am also from the South, but I also live on the West Coast. I also am, you know, an activist, you know, whereas, you know, you identify as a Hispanic, queer, cisgender female, and you are also a daughter of someone and also, you know, a co-president. So I'm curious to hear about Gay Lesta's approach to the intersectionality of this issue, because even though people coming to your organization are, you know, traditionally fall in LGBTQ, you know, they're also all of these other things. And so how does Gay Lesta, you know, manage and navigate that issue? Which I think is a good thing. I don't mean to say intersectionality is an issue as a bad thing. It's just, it's something that's existing right now and has been.
No, it's actually so important that I believe every mental health provider out there, no matter who they are and what organization they're a part of, should always integrate intersectionality and an understanding of people's intersection of identities into clinical work. So basically in Gay Lesta, we understand the impact that social factors have on the well-being of our community. And mental health and well-being cannot be understood outside of the frame of reference that includes factors such as minority stress, racism, discrimination, poverty, economic insecurity. So all of these factors really impact a person's sense of wellness and how they're able to walk through the world. How much privilege a person has really informs how they will be treated in the world and their perception of reality. So as a psychotherapist, it's very important to really explore a person's intersection of identities and be well informed to how they are treated in the world because of those identities. And also, if people, you know, being able to access areas of marginalization and move into a sense of empowerment in those areas in the best way possible, that's really important. And I think also, you know, understanding what areas we have privilege in our intersections of identities. And, you know, how can we actually recognize that privilege and how can we redistribute that privilege in our interpersonal relationships? How can we use it to the benefit of other people to create more of a socially just world? So those are things that I certainly think of, you know, when I am sitting with someone as a therapist, I really value. I think it's very powerful to integrate all of this. And I know as a group, Gay Lesta is very passionate about social justice issues as such as well.
And you brought up another term that is a buzzword right now, but also I think authentically so, which is empowerment. And so, I mean, I was blessed with amazing parents that made me feel empowered from like age two. You know, they were like, you can do it. And I was running around building forts in my house. Right. So, but, you know, I realized that that is not everyone's narrative. And so what is it to, in your eyes, what does it mean to be fully empowered? You know, and what would our world be like if everyone actually was able to step into their own power?
Well, I think being able to really feel and acknowledge your own personal value as a human being, I think that is one of the first steps into moving into an empowerment, is really feeling that and having that reflected back to you in your relationships as well is really important. So being able to cultivate healthy relationships with others, being able to make choices to place yourself in relationships with other people who are affirmative of who you are, that's really important for empowerment. And then when somebody is in that place of really recognizing and owning their own value, you know, you can make behavioral choices in the world that move toward your personal values and what you value. And when you're able to do that, that is a reflection of empowerment. So that's how I would define it.
I'm wondering about, you know, what it's like locally for you guys. You know, you reached out to the Oakland A's, you went to that game, you had a pride night over there. You know, I want to know, what are some of the events that are happening locally and what are you seeing in your community in terms of whether it's just the LGBTQ members or are there straight allies also integrating with you guys? What is the community like around you?
Yeah, so, you know, in the Bay Area, we do outreach, especially at different street fairs that come up. So, for instance, Oakland Pride is coming up next month in September, and we're going to have a booth there. So we have a booth, and we have informational brochures where the public can interact with us, gain access to, you know, our website, our web address. They can talk to therapists that are there staffing the booth to learn a little bit more about how to find a therapist. And I mean, I think what we find is that people are really excited to get to know who we are for the first time. We also have people, you know, coming up to our booth and telling us, oh my God, I'm so grateful for Gay Lesta. I found my therapist 20 years ago with you, and it is the best thing that ever happened to me. What a great resource. So I think locally, people are very happy to know that we're here and to utilize this as a resource. And I would definitely say allies engage with us as well. There are definitely people who are seeking services that are our allies that have an LGBT loved one, a family or a friend, a child, maybe a partner who is LGBT, and so they seek out our services as well.
How, so riffing off of that, it sounds like you have a natural connection and are building relationships in the San Francisco Bay Area. For our listeners who are not necessarily in a city like San Francisco, you know, how would you recommend that they start building those kinds of relationships and creating coalitions for support?
Mm-hmm. So coalitions of support within the LGBT community?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, not everybody lives in an area where, you know, community is accessible, right? So, but it is very important to form community, especially if you are LGBT identified. It's important to not isolate, especially in these times, which are very stressful for us. So, you know, use the internet, go online and see if there are any kind of online communities that you can join or be a part of, right? If somebody wanted to access a therapist in the state of California, there are a lot of therapists as part of our network that will do distance therapy. In other words, video conferencing therapy. So you can be in a different location but still access an LGBT affirmative therapist. So I would just seek out organizations as such, even in your local area, even though there are not a lot of them, that are affirmative, family and friends, and definitely use the internet.
Yeah, the internet's it's a great source because I know there are several search engines for therapists that you can use. But I do want to ask, though, going back towards the conversion therapy thing, is there a way to kind of suss out the wrong organizations, ones that you shouldn't be steered towards? Because I do think there are some traps kind of laid out, and if some people might get some misinformation. So is there a proper search engine for people, like, you know, if they're not near a Gay Lesta, is there something for them to look towards so they can find the proper therapy outlet?
So are you talking about LGBT consumers who are looking for a therapist other than searching for Gay Lesta through Gay Lesta?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So, you know, there are, Psychology Today is a really popular outlet for people to search for therapists. I think in general, if you're, you know, whenever you're looking for a therapist, it's really important to interview therapists that you may potentially be going to therapy, seen in therapy, right? So no matter who you contact, it is very traditional to have an initial consultation with a therapist where you talk to them over the phone for maybe about 20 minutes or so and talk a little bit about what you're looking for in therapy. And then you get to ask them questions about themselves. And that's really a time that you get to interview the person that you might be working with. And so a really important question to ask these therapists that you're calling is, you know, what is your experience working with LGBT individuals? You know, how comfortable are you in doing so? Can you give me an example of how you might work with someone like myself? And just listen to the way they answer your questions and pay attention to how you feel when they answer. You know, do you feel comfortable with them? Do you have a good intuition about working with them? Or do maybe they stumble through their words or give you an answer that doesn't feel good to you? That will give you information on what it will be like to work with this person. So I think it's important for consumers to know that you have the right to interview your therapist, and you should be interviewing your therapist just like you would be interviewing anyone for a job that would, you know, you'd be taking on. So I would encourage people to do that in order to sort through who they would want to work with.
I think you've just touched on one of the biggest misperceptions of the therapy process, is that you are allowed to just, it's like dating. You're allowed to go on a first date and not call them back, you know? I didn't know that until, because my first therapist, magically, it was a match made in heaven, and we just worked together for years. And then the second one, it took more time. And my mom was like, this is totally normal. And I was like, oh, cool. So I'm curious if there's any other misperceptions like that come up in your work regularly that we can kind of demystify here?
Well, I mean, I would agree with you in that people think that, you know, therapy is a one size fits all with the therapist that you see. You know, psychotherapy is very unique because it's a specialized personal relationship that you're going to have with someone. And just like all of our relationships, some of them work better for us than others. So it's really important to, like I said, interview different therapists and to feel different people out before you, you know, decide that you want to settle down with one person and do the work, right? As far as other misconceptions, you know, I'm not having any that come to mind right now that I can think of.
No worries. No worries. That's good. That means you're doing your job well.
Yes. So Chelsea, well, we kind of want to just end this by figuring out for people today that are listening, if they're local, how can they get involved with Gay Lesta and how can they interact with you, with your organization?
Right. So if somebody is local and you happen to be a mental health professional or perhaps an intern that's working towards being a mental health professional, you can always go to our website, gaylesta.org, and you can join us. You can become a member with us and enjoy the benefits of being part of our referral directory, being part of our social outings and groups, and being part of our continuing education that we offer. So it's a really great thing to join. Also, if people are listening and they are consumers, they can just go to our website, gaylesta.org. And if you're looking for a therapist, you just click on the link, find a therapist, and it will walk you through ways to do so.
That's perfect. And then I believe you guys are also on social media as well, so we can find you on there.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. So, Chelsea, thank you so much for coming on today. We really wanted to talk about mental health in many aspects, and especially with the LGBTQ community. There is a resource. So if you are out there and you need someone to talk to, there is a place for you. And there are people waiting to hear your story, and they will welcome you with open arms. But like we said, you know, you can call them, you can interview them, make sure they are a right fit for you. And but just know that you do have that option and you do have that resource. So Chelsea, thank you again so much for coming onto the podcast with us today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Hey y'all, we're circling back to another organization from season one for our spotlight this week. So stay tuned for an update and more info from Drain the NRA.
Hi, I'm Laura Menino, and I'm a founder of Drain the NRA. Drain the NRA is a grassroots anti-gun lobby organization founded in LA in the fall of 2017 after the shooting in Vegas. We're a movement that boycotts the gun industry, its corporate partners, and votes out the politicians it pays off. Our website is drainthenra.com, and we're at Drain the NRA on Twitter and Instagram, and our Facebook page is Drain NRA Blood Money. Drain the NRA has been a leader in the Boycott NRA movement, which has led to over 30 companies dropping their partnerships with the NRA. We also supported the California Treasurer's efforts to have California's public pensions the largest in the world to fully divest from gun manufacturers and retailers. But we hope our biggest success will be on November 6th when we flip California congressional districts and vote NRA blood money out of California in Congress. Right now, we've turned our attention to the midterm elections, and the best way you can help us is to volunteer for a local flippable district. You might live in that district, or that district might be an hour's drive. Either way, voting is not enough. We all have to volunteer. What we've discovered in some of the districts we've been to is that so many voters don't know what's going on. They don't know who's running, they don't know who their current congressional rep is, and a lot of these GOP incumbents who take NRA blood money have relied on getting reelected by low-info voters barely turning out. Many of us were those voters before 2016. So we all have to take responsibility to ensure strong voter turnout this year, and the way to do that is to connect to these voters. You might not remember a flyer, but you will remember the person who knocked on your door or spoke to you on the phone. So if you can ask for directions or ask a store employee for help or give an order to a server of a restaurant, you can knock on a door or pick up the phone and talk to a stranger. It doesn't matter that someone got cranky with you. You're an adult. You'll get over it. You know what makes me cranky? 2 more years of Trump gone unchecked. So if all of us listening makes contact with 10 voters in flippable districts, we can take an active role in what might be the most important election in recent memory, and we could be part of history. I know I want to go to bed on November 6th knowing I did everything I could. I hope you feel the same way. In addition to volunteering for a local campaign, you can sign up for Drain the NRA's mailing list at the bottom of our homepage, drainthenra.com, for upcoming events. And if you'd like to help us pay for snacks and gas and supplies to help us with our phone banking and canvassing efforts, you can make a small donation on Venmo at Drain the NRA or PayPal. You can also buy a Drain the NRA t-shirt or notebook or travel mug at our shop at TeePublic. All links you can find on our support page of our website, but most importantly, vote and volunteer for our campaign. Thank you so much.
And that's it for this week's episode of We Rebel Podcast. As always, please feel free to contact us if you have any questions for the two of us or our guests at werebelpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find us on all the social medias at We Rebel Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
See everybody next week.
Hi, I'm Winston.
And I'm David.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast on Campfire Media called Try It, You'll Like It.
And on our podcast, we have our guests eat a food they hate one last time.
And we have so many crazy guests.
We got amazing chefs.
We have killer comedians.
Bakers.
Candlestick makers.
Distillers.
Brewers.
Food writers.
Oh, they're writing about food.
Ooh, they're probably having some food while they're writing about that food.
Yeah, because we're eating food, and they're eating food, and you're listening to It Happen.
All you ASMR hits, enjoy. Chomp chomp.
So check it out every Thursday at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Mmm, that was good.
Campfire.